You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
After an 0-4 start, the Texans parted ways with Bill O'Brien yesterday, and he's the most successful coach in team history. Took them to the playoffs in 4 of the last 5 years. And I started to wonder about this with Bill O'Brien. You know, coaches want control. They're all control freaks, and I understand that, but you should be a coach. It's hard to be a coach and a GM. Now, some have been able to do it. Bill Belichick is able to do it. But Bill O'Brien is not Bill Belichick. And if he was just hired on his coaching abilities, would he still have that job considering what he's done over the last 5 years? The playoffs 4 of the last 5 years. We can talk about the AFC South being watered down. He still has won those divisions. Bill O'Brien was fired despite leading them to 4 divisional titles in the last 5 years. Then you start to look at this since 2015. Who has won the most divisional titles by a head coach? Bill Belichick, 5. Bill O'Brien and Andy Reid, 4. Sean Payton with 3. That's pretty good company there for Bill O'Brien. It's Bill O'Brien, the GM. That's the problem. Because he took over the job as GM in 2019. This past offseason, he traded wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins to the Cardinals. You got running back David Johnson and a second-round pick. Hopkins leads the NFL in catches. Texans have struggled to move the ball. He's had other moves that didn't work out. Gave up the future for Laremy Tunsil. Do you rebuild now for a team that's 0-4? Very difficult schedule, first 4 games. But firing Bill O'Brien is a recognition from ownership that it's tried something, you know, they have to try something new here because they were not going to get as far as they thought they were going to get. And they finally got a quarterback there in Deshaun Watson. And I've always implored them to get an offensive line so he doesn't end up like Andrew Luck. You traded away DeAndre Hopkins. We knew that DeAndre Hopkins did not want to stay in Houston, did not get along with Bill O'Brien. And he wanted to be the highest paid wide receiver. But I got to get a little bit more for DeAndre Hopkins because I need draft picks. And you've given up your draft picks. You brought in Laremy Tunsil, which you gave up a lot to bring in Laremy Tunsil. You got to protect Deshaun Watson. I understand that. But if I'm giving up DeAndre Hopkins, who is one of the top 3 wide receivers, I would hope I could get a wide receiver in return or a number 1 pick that maybe I could use on a wide receiver somewhere down the line. But Bill O'Brien, you can argue, was a good coach. There's no argument about him being a GM, I think, because he made some moves that are going to really impact this team the next couple of years. And Romeo Crennel takes over. I don't know who comes in and takes over this job. By the way, I asked Peter King this question. Could you just hire Eric Bieniemy from the Kansas City Chiefs, the offensive coordinator, and say, you're the next head coach of the Texans? Well, there is the anti-tampering policy. And if you're under contract during the season, you're not able to negotiate with somebody. You can't give that job to Eric Bieniemy right now if you wanted to. The Jets couldn't do that if they were going to fire Adam Gase. I wonder about what the Falcons are going to do. Because Arthur Blank, from what I'm told, did not want to be the first owner to fire a coach this season. Well, he doesn't have to worry about that now with Bill O'Brien fired. And Dan Quinn losing last night to the Green Bay Packers. And we knew that was going to happen. I mean, Dan Quinn knows it's not if, but when. And it's probably, they'll probably extend it a little bit further because, what, you know, unless you have somebody that you can put in there and go, this is going to help us. This is an upgrade. You know, unless the players stop playing for this coach, and I don't get that feeling in Atlanta, but from what I was told, Arthur Blank did not want to be that first guy, first owner to go, I'm going to fire my coach because of the sensitivity of COVID and dealing with all, you know, these obstacles, these hurdles here. But, you know, after a month, you know, this is business now. And Dan Quinn may not last the rest of the season, and nobody's going to be surprised there. But there will be quite a few openings. And Eric Bieniemy, the offensive coordinator with the Chiefs, is going to probably have his pick. And speaking of the Chiefs, if I'm facing Kansas City, I look at what Bill Belichick has done. The last couple of times he's faced Patrick Mahomes, he's going to drop 8 defensive backs. He doesn't blitz. He wants to, and he's done a good job in keeping the numbers reasonable for Patrick Mahomes. And I did wonder, with the defensive philosophy last night, if Cam Newton was playing, New England would have won that game, in my opinion. Or at least it would have been really close. Because you had Hoyer and Stidham. It was close with them. By the way, after watching their performance, Cam Newton's job is safe when he does come back. Safer. But the defensive strategy here is, and New England has good secondary. So not everybody, when people go, we got our blueprint, well, I have to have a good secondary. First of all, it helps having a defensive genius in Belichick devising all of this. But I thought that they did a pretty good job on the road with less than inspiring play from the quarterbacks there. And if you're going to, you know, if you can control the ball, and early on, New England ran the ball, controlled the ball. I don't want Hoyer to make a mistake. And then he made a mistake. And then you're in trouble. But I got to keep Mahomes off the field as best as you can. So a team that beats Kansas City this year is going to beat them, in my opinion, by running the football. And then what do you do defensively? And can you match up with all those weapons and frustrate Patrick Mahomes? Mahomes is just like Kurt Warner. When Kurt Warner joined us, this is a couple of years ago, and I said, did you like being blitzed when you were quarterbacking the Rams? And he said, I loved it. Loved it. Quarterbacks, if they know somebody is coming, that leaves an area open, and they love that. And Kurt Warner said, I couldn't wait for you to blitz me because somebody was always open. I think the Patriots blitzed him twice last night. That was it. As far as Aaron Rodgers, he's making it look easy. And you, even if you're a Packers fan, you're going, who are those guys out there? Give me a Jones and a Williams and the tight end and never heard of him. And Rodgers just seems like this is kind of simple. And it feels like he bought in. He bought into Matt LaFleur and said, all right, let's try it.
He's motivated.
Yeah. Now, at the end of the year, do we... Yeah, I know. Oh, man, you drafted a quarterback. He's got a chip on his shoulder.
I had to say that. I know it bothers you.
Oh, I know it does. Yeah. So, if that's the case, everybody should be doing that. Why didn't the Steelers do it? They got a guy, Duck Devlin. That didn't inspire Ben Roethlisberger, I don't think. Did he have a chip on his shoulder? I got a chip. No, it's a chip in my elbow. Yes, McLovin.
Yeah, but Duck Devlin was an undrafted, unplayable guy.
I know.
I was just making fun of his name. Set me back one second. If Cam Newton played last night, do you think the Chiefs would have actually showed up and been more awake for that game? I feel like it's easy to say. They were just like, oh, we got Brian Hoyer. We're barely going to play. It was not the Chiefs last night.
Well, they did say that we didn't have time to prepare. Keep in mind, New England didn't. They had the same amount of time to prepare and had to fly on game day and then quarantine when they get there. Testing, and then they go out and play. So no excuses from Kansas City. At least New England has one. You actually got an extra day to prepare for this game. Yeah, McLovin.
Is this a blueprint for slowing down Mahomes, what you just described? Can other teams, like the Ravens, blitz all the time and get shredded by him?
Yeah, I would hate to see you blitz him. I just think if you run and control the clock and limit the number of chances he gets when he's on the field. Now, easier said than done, but it is going to be difficult to beat this team. But if you do, I think you'll run the ball, and I think that your defense will be, you know, empowered by your secondary. I don't need to put pressure on him as much as just frustrate him and make those windows even smaller. But we'll talk to Chris Sims a little bit later on loan from Football Night in America and, of course, ProFootballTalk.com. McLovin, what kind of poll question do you have for me?
Okay, we had this debate pre-show. Who would you start next week if you were the Patriots? Brian Hoyer, who was 15 for 24, 0 TDs, 1 INT, or Jared Stidham, who was 5 for 13, 60 yards, a TD, and 2 interceptions?
They're playing the Broncos. I would probably still start Hoyer. Like, just go out there and just be simple. Just play. Don't try to win a game. Let's just get out of here with a win and then welcome Cam back. Stidham's not afraid. So, I had 2 interceptions and had another one overturned, but I like it. I just don't like it now because I, you know, you have a chance to go to the playoffs with Cam. You're not going to go to the playoffs with Jarrett Stidham right now. But I did like that he looks the part, and I think he thinks the part and confident enough. It were just some of those throws where I go, dude, you're on the field you're with Patrick Mahomes, but you're not Patrick Mahomes. Yeah, see.
That's I liked with both quarterbacks. They're like, all right, they're letting him sling it a little bit. This is fun. It's not just going to be a running day.
I was also watching the Packers game, and I said yesterday, you got two defenses that are porous, and you got some offenses that can score some points, and the over-under was 56.5, I think. And I said, this is screaming for bettors to take the over. That's why I would take the under. And I had to make up for my Miami Dolphins bet. But there, I gave you the under for the Green Bay Packers and the Atlanta Falcons. You're welcome. What do you have, McLovin?
Okay, this is super mean, and we don't do this on the show, but who's the next coach that's going to get fired? Is it more likely, Dan Quinn, Matt Patricia in Detroit, or Adam Gase in New York? Although the Jets, I guess, gave him a vote of confidence?
I always felt whenever I heard that vote of confidence, that meant you absolutely positively were getting fired. Like, there's no doubt about it. Of course we're going to keep him. We're going to keep him the rest of the season. Okay. Do any of those coaches last the entire season, I wonder? Because Matt Patricia, you can't hold fourth quarter leads. And this is a team that there was a lot of preseason buzz. They were going to make the playoffs. And it's make the playoffs or, you know, Matt's going to get fired. And it goes back to, remember when I told you I'd been told that they really, like, they wanted to take Tua. But they said in-house, the coaching staff knew, we have to win this next season. And that means with Matthew Stafford. And could you trade Matthew Stafford? Now, once again, this was just chatter leading up to the draft. And I said, if you're going to go all in, then go all in. And, you know, Matt Patricia could hitch his wagon to Tua and maybe get an extra year or so here. But that's not going to happen if they don't turn this around. Atlanta, Dan Quinn, we know, is gone. Adam Gase, I'm assuming, is gone, especially if they're going to have the number one pick in the draft. Yeah, Paulie.
It's interesting that if Detroit fires Matt Patricia, he'll be the hottest defensive coordinator prospect immediately. I think the next day, everyone will line up to hire him, but not as a head coach, back as defensive coordinator.
Yeah. You know, we just assume that is the progression. You're really good at your job. Therefore, we're going to put you in a job that we don't know if you're really good at that. Yeah, McLovin.
But they've spent so much money on defense, again, they get torched.
I know.
It's bizarre.
And he's a defensive-minded guy. But, you know, I have no idea who some of these other coordinators out there are. Eric Bieniemy will get a job. He'll get to choose what job he wants. Yeah, McLovin.
But here's the poll I want to put up. If you were a successful coach and you had your choice of college or pro, off of Dabo, or more like a Ryan Day or Lincoln Riley, which would you choose?
Lincoln Riley.
Lincoln Riley, if McCarthy doesn't start winning, just start.
Well, no, you
start
can't
playing
go,
that Cowboys shirt.
So now all of a sudden we're going to bring in Lincoln Riley, who's not winning at Oklahoma.
Oh, that doesn't matter. He's still Lincoln Riley. You know how Jerry falls in love.
Yeah, but he's got to stay in love with Mike McCarthy for a little while.
I don't know.
No, he's got to give him a chance here. He's got to give him a couple of years there. He's not going to be a one and done in there. No, he's not.
He'll finish 8-8 and they'll get a contract extension.
Okay, say you're Ryan Day and you get, which is better, to coach like a big time college program where you have...
I don't know his personality.
You're a coach. You have a decade of success at a program, or you can challenge yourself and go to the NFL. It's kind of off Dabo.
Well, and we were talking about this prior to the start of the show. And Seton goes, you know, isn't that just how we think that you want to go for the next job, the better job, or, you know, the better challenge? And it's true that we always, you know, I think most of us think that way. Like, hey, I've mastered this. I'm really good at radio. I want to be on TV. Hey, I'm on TV. I want to be on SportsCenter. Hey, I'm on SportsCenter. I want to host Football Night in America. You know, I understand the progression there, but Dabo Swinney to me is a college coach. Joe Paterno was a college coach. Bear Bryant, college coach. Mike Krzyzewski, college coach. There's certain guys. Nick Saban, college coach. Steve Spurrier, college coach. Now, that didn't mean that they didn't want to try it, because a lot of those coaches I mentioned flirted with it. Krzyzewski nearly became the Laker head coach. There is that allure of, man, do I do it now? Do I test myself now? But, you know, it's the personality makeup. Like running a team, you have to answer all the questions. If I'm just the offensive coordinator, I just deal with the offense. I'm the head coach. I got to deal with the owner. I got to deal with fans, boosters. I got to deal with parents. I mean, there's so much involved in all of this, depending on if you're in the NFL or college. Yeah, Paul.
I can't think of a great college coach who didn't try the NFL. Spurrier, Saban, Petrino, Butch Davis, Dennis Erickson. I can't think of one who just said, I'm staying. You know, remember Kirk Ferentz at Iowa?
Well, Paterno. I know that the Redskins looked at Paterno.
He went wire to wire.
Yeah.
About a decade ago, Kirk Ferentz, maybe 15 years ago, Kirk Ferentz was being talked about for the pros, and he passed.
Yeah.
And he's going wire to wire at Iowa.
Yeah.
He's the anomaly.
Well, you get to a point where they stop calling you.
Right.
Like, they'll call, and then when you go, no, I'm good, then they stop calling eventually. This program brought to you by Home Depot. They make it easier for the pros. They got delivery options to get you what you need exactly where you need it, so you can keep doing whatever it is to get the job done. The Home Depot, how doers get more done. What's next for the Texans here? How attractive is that job? Because I don't think it's an attractive job. You know, I wonder if J.J. Watt will be with the team next year. You know, Deshaun Watson without weapons. Ooh. And I think they got salary cap issues as well. They don't have any draft picks. Other than that, Houston's a nice place to live. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com, or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Sean Salisbury, morning host, Sean Salisbury Show, which is convenient that Sean is hosting that on Sports Talk 790 in Houston, former NFL quarterback and friend of the show. Sean, good morning. Why fire Bill O'Brien now?
It had to happen, Dan. And I've probably been, knowing how tough it is to play the position, but also know how tough it is to watch coaches winning's tough. And I've probably been a little bit more patient with Bill than most people in this city. They've been begging for it for years. But what set me off yesterday morning was, maybe this is the reality because this is how he feels, is listening to the press conference after the game when he said, hey, we got a bunch of great guys and we played hard and we didn't give up. It told me it's moral victory Monday and that just getting there is okay. It had to happen now because you got to send a loud message, not only to your coaches and to this city, Dan, but the players are underachieving as well, and I think you put them on notice. This is long overdue. I don't like to see guys get fired, but it's the business. That's why you get paid the big money. And just getting there is Cincinnati Bengals was, you know, teams in the past. Getting there is not good enough. It shouldn't be good enough. And Cal McNair was late to the party on this, and Bill O'Brien needed to go, and they need a culture change. Jack Easterby needs to go too. They need to wipe it clean and start fresh.
I don't know if the mistake was becoming the GM there, Sean, because as a coach, I can make an argument, a pretty good argument. Bill O'Brien was a good coach, and he was winning divisions when he didn't have good quarterbacks. It felt like once he became the GM and then made a couple of mistakes, then everybody sort of piled on Bill O'Brien. And I don't know Bill O'Brien. I think taking the GM role is probably the reason why he's not coaching anymore in Houston. Your thoughts?
Yeah, Dan, I 100% agree. And I've been preaching that since he got the gig. And anybody that dangles the GM carrot, of course a head coach is going to take it. Who wouldn't? You want that power. At least you want some say in it. And I can remember with our good friend when we were doing SportsCenter, Stuart Scott. And remember when Mike Holmgren took the GM job in Seattle, Dan, when he was coaching as well? He had both. And I can remember sitting on that set, and I told Stuart that day, I said, when he decides to give up the GM job and goes back to just being a coach, Seattle will win again. And I believe the next year, the year after, they were in the Super Bowl. And not a pat on the back, but you can't be a doctor and a lawyer there's only one dude that I know could do that. And he's in New England, and he also had the best quarterback on the planet for 20 years. So it's not a bad gig, but I'm with you. And Bill liked power. And the problem is, Dan, I talked to a head coach and a coordinator in this league that said to be a position coach, you get about 4 hours a day to yourself. To be a coordinator, you get about 2 hours a day to yourself. To be a head coach, you need two or four more hours. Now you add Monday personnel decisions. And he also was the play caller for the longest time. You just can't do it. And I have not talked to one former coach or former front office guy yet that thought that anybody could do both great. And in the process of trying to do both, Dan, he became average. Because I'm with you. He knows X's and O's. Bill's a decent coach. The problem is you lose the focus and you lose track. You want to be in the fast lane the whole time. And unfortunately, their team played like they were in the slow lane.
Is this an attractive job?
Yeah, well, draft picks make it unattractive, Dan.
I know.
They've spent the most money on any offense in the league, and yet they're about their production's one of the lowest in the league. It's attractive for a couple reasons. That with Cal McNair, the owner, you and I can go 4-12 and keep our job for 7 years. You can win divisions and keep a job. So there's an overabundance of loyalty and kind of stay out of your way. But, Dan, as you know, trying to find that guy at quarterback's hard to do. And when you've got Deshaun Watson, who's still got to get better. He holds the ball too long, and he needs to improve. And there's no doubt that'll have something to do, like, with what Greg Roman's done with Lamar Jackson and what Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy have done with Patrick Mahomes to even make them better. Great quarterbacks take a six and make him an eight. And Deshaun's got that DNA. But it's an attractive job, number one, because if you're not a GM right now, you'll take a GM job anywhere. But Houston, it's Texas, it's football. You've got some potential. You've got a left tackle. It starts there. You got a quarterback, it starts there. And if you had the edge rusher, you'd have the top three positions. So you've got a quarterback, and any coach or any GM that looks at it says, well, I start there. You're going to go through a couple rough patches, but you already have the quarterback and the left tackle sewn up. Yeah, it's an attractive job, especially if you've not been a GM and you're going to be a first-time GM.
You working in Houston, living in Houston, you know, the Astros – success here is interesting. You know, I'm following it, and I always want to hear what they have to say after they have a win. And, you know, now all of a sudden, you know, Carlos Correa is like, hey, what are you going to say about us now? Like, they don't understand how the rest of the country views them. Like, you're not going to erase history. And for the Astros to feel like somehow it's the media's fault, if my thought is when I saw that, hey, all right, you beat Oakland. All right, you got to the playoffs. You had a sub-500 record. Why did you cheat in the first place? If you're so damn good, why did you cheat in the first place? So why don't they just shut up and play, take your medicine, and maybe you get to a World Series?
Dan, I am with you and living in this town. And it's you know what's odd is that you know this football state, Texas is a football state. I'm telling you right now, even with Bill O'Brien, while people are fired up about it, do you realize, and I know you do, this is an Astros town. It's for whatever reason. And there's a sensitivity that goes along with it, I think, because they think, well, everybody else does it. Well, everybody else doing it still does. If your oldest child does something wrong, it doesn't mean, well, it's cool if my other two or other three do. So, yeah, there's a sensitivity. And I said the other day when Correa said it after beating the Twins, there comes a point in time, you get two ears and one mouth. Use them accordingly because it's very sensitive. There, maybe it's a history of, you know, we're winning now and we had a bunch of 100 loss seasons, but you're right. Just, I would rather you zip it and keep going and playing well. Cause yesterday when they're hitting, Dan, they're off the hook. They've got this dangerous lineup like the Yankees in baseball, but it grates on me. And I live here because it's like, at some point in time, remember you made your bed, you got to sleep in it.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, even though nobody likes COVID, you got off the hook a little bit for the simple reason is you didn't have to deal with 40,000 people roasting you for two straight years. So they're able to do it, but I would just assume they go win a World Series if they can like this and talk about it after, not on the way there, because hey, you did it, you deal with it, and then you got to overcome it, and they're still not there just yet.
And you've been booed by 40,000 people before.
Dan, I get booed in my own home. So yes, I actually have. By the whole, you're having a tough day when you say, when people ask you over your career, well, did you get booed? Yeah, more by the home crowd than the visiting crowd.
And the home crowd loves the backup quarterback, and you still got booed.
Here's what happened, Dan. They say, Sean Sosby, you're going in, Rich Gann insert, you go in. Then after your first throw, they're saying, oh, gosh, why did we put him in? Our backup quarterback blows. Yeah, so it's the greatest gig in the world as long as they don't expose you. But
who was the best quarterback? Who was the best quarterback you defeated?
Well, I'm undefeated against Elway. Just ask me, and I remind John. I think I might be the only quarterback in history who's undefeated against Steve Young, Brett Favre, and John Elway, and that's the truth. Oh, honest to God. I got Elway in college, and there's one big difference between me and those three guys is that they all got mustard-colored jackets, and I'm sitting here listening to you dog me about my Winnipeg Grey Cup. But I did. I beat all three of those guys, so they're the best I beat. But I also lost to some guys that you say, nice, John, way to go. You lost to that guy? There you go.
You did have those names ready.
Let me tell you something.
A little too ready.
You know how Bob Costas carries around Mickey Mantle's baseball card?
Yeah.
I got it laminated in my wallet. Hey, oh, you wanted to see the highlight? Sure, let me get that for you. Yeah, no doubt about it.
I've mentioned this before, and you played the position. When Rodgers is playing at a high level, I've never seen a quarterback make it look easier. And that includes Montana, Elway, Brady, even Mahomes now. There's some, I don't know what it is. So when you see Rodgers, when he does it like at, you know, he's...
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, why does he make it... How does he make it look so easy?
Well, doesn't it seem like he's like when he's got something, he knows something that the rest of us don't?
Yes.
It does. And, Dan, I was fortunate to play in the golden era. I just wasn't one of them. Marino and Elway and Kelly and Favre and Montana and Young, you started in Warren Moon. Listen, Marino was the best pure thrower I ever saw. Joe Namath had a great release too. Aaron Rodgers, as quickly as it comes out, Dan, it's so I think it's probably because you think he's kind of casual, but there's an intensity that goes with him. And I think there's very few players at his position that I know take his anger and apply it to not only his own coach saying, oh, really? You drafted a coach in the first round, a player in the first round? I'm going to show you why he's going to be sitting there for 5 years. I think he bottles it up, and nobody imposes his will on somebody smoother and better. And it is. He's like Fonzie. He did. He's like, it's like Arthur Fonzarelli. It's like, everything's just cool and I do it. But he feels like he knows something the rest of us don't. But watching him throw a football, I'm not sure in the history that I've covered it, played it, or watched it, I've seen anybody throw it quicker, smoother, and with more accuracy and with more confidence on throws no human being has any business to attempt. Off the ground, on the ground, off schedule, on schedule. When he's going like this, there's no better player in the world than him.
And Mahomes last night, it wasn't a great performance, but I give a lot of credit to the game plan there with the Patriots. And we'd love to say, boy, now we have the blueprint here. Well, you have to have Bill Belichick. That helps with your blueprint. And the secondary is really good in New England. Can you see teams? Because I would never blitz Mahomes. I mean, the reason why San Francisco was going to win the Super Bowl is they weren't blitzing. They didn't have to blitz Mahomes. That front four was great. And you put pressure and then keep everybody back. Bill basically just said last night, I got 8 defensive backs. I'm not going to put any pressure on you. We'll blitz you twice. Can you see teams like my strategy would be we got to run the ball, limit the number of times he gets on the field, and then I'm just going to make you get, throw a football into a tight window.
Yes, and hope, Dan, that your quarterback matches him, that you got another guy like him on the other side of the ball that could at least score, because he's going to yawn his way to 3 touchdowns. And their game planning is so, and it's great, it's all fine and dandy, when you got a good scheme on defense. The problem is they got a whole bunch of guys, their fifth guy is better than their fifth options. Like, man, I wish I had him as my 1 or 2 option, and Mahomes knows how to find him. And the sign of a great player is when you can take, and I've always said this, when you're playing a bad game or by his standards, an average game, and you still find ways to win. And I'm with you, Dan. The best way with a guy like that, if you're going to play single with their speed, he's going to find the open guy. He can take a 9-step drop falling back. He can take a 3-step drop. He can throw a screen. They'll bubble at the goal line with the bubble screen with the tight end. But for me, I'm with you. Peyton Manning used to be great at this. Defensive coordinators, see, they don't believe you have enough patience to go 80 yards 5 times in a game. So they'll make you do it. And a guy like Manning or Breeze has always said, well, I'll match that because I'll be patient. I'll throw the check down 8-10 times. I'm with you. I can't blitz him because if you don't get to him, you're dead. So what you do is you make him get to the point like all great players do. I threw him three checkdowns. I got to force this. So then I hope you get a tip ball interception. I would rush three or four, and I would play coverage against him and hope that you got three or four guys that can at least make him move off his spot sometimes. But I'm with you. Zone, go through your progressions, be patient. If you're going to beat me, you're beating me 17 to 10. I can't let you beat me 35 to 21, because if they're in that 28 points or better, there's not a team in football that can touch them.
Always good to check in with you, Sean. Thanks for joining us, and we appreciate it.
Thank you. And by the way, vanilla dipped cone and chocolate when you take the guys to ice cream. That's for me. I'm in. You feel me?
Okay.
Maybe some sprinkles on it too. Oh, thanks, buddy.
Yeah, Fritzy loves sprinkles. Thank you, Sean. That's Sean Salisbury, morning host of the Sean Salisbury Show at Sports Talk 790 in Houston, the former NFL quarterback.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
He has spent 25 seasons as the Padres TV color analyst, the former major league pitcher, Mark Grant, joining us now. First pitch, Padres-Dodgers, NLDS. Game one is tonight at 9:30 Eastern. Been a long time, Mark. How are you?
Hey, how you doing? Dan Spastic. It's been a long time since the Padres have been to the postseason. In fact, the last time I watched Padre baseball when they were so bad, I had a six-pack before the sixth inning. As sure as God made green apples, the Chicago Cubs will not be in the World Series this year. How's it going, Dayton Flyer?
Hi, buddy.
Dan, it's been a long time, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. Now, while you're doing your Harry Carey, Todd Fritz has been working on a...
There's a drive! It might be!
I think I got a bell. I should bow out right now.
A home run for Bobby Dernier. And the Cubs take a 5-4 lead in the bottom of the sixth.
Did you ever meet Harry Carey?
I did. And it was a treat. I mean, I grew up in Joliet, Illinois, and you're very much familiar with that. Now, everybody says, you know, you're a product of your environment. Well, I believe you're also a product of your sports environment. I grew up listening to Jack Brickhouse and Harry Carey. Well, Dan, guess what kind of announcer I'm going to be if I become an announcer, right? I'm going to be a homer. And, you know, I'm a self-proclaimed homer. I love my Padres. I love the game of baseball. But then again, you know, you got to be critical about your team too. And believe me, there's been a lot of that over the years. But I love my Friars. I'm so happy for them to be in the playoffs this year.
You got a bobblehead over your shoulder.
Yeah, I know.
It's a small bobblehead.
Can you guess who it is? No, is it too small?
It's too small.
Okay. Do you want me to bring it up over here for you?
Yeah, you can bring it up.
Because I see all your pictures and everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what? I don't have a lot of baseball memorabilia in my house. By the way, I'm sporting my Slam Diego shirt.
Well, you don't have many baseball memories worth having.
You know what? If somebody's got a picture of somebody behind third base by the dugout backing up third, that's probably the picture that I
have. What is your favorite baseball memory? Like, just to give the audience an idea of the quality of play.
You know what? I had a 1-2-3 inning back in 1988. I think it was August 18th, and it was a day game at Jack Murphy Stadium. It was unbelievable. It was the most exciting. It was like an 8-pitch inning as well. I snuck a strikeout. Wow. And I got a couple of ground balls, a jam shot to the first baseman.
How many Hall of Famers do you think you struck out in your career?
One that comes to mind is, you know what? You ask any pitcher numbers, and they're going to remember numbers. I remember some numbers. The one that really sticks out, Ozzie Smith was 2-for-20 off me. So, I mean, I struck out Ozzie Smith. Obviously, he was known for his glove. I think he had a fever that day, maybe, or the times that I faced. But, I can't remember, Dan. I know probably your staff there has all those stats.
Did you face Bonds? Did you face McGuire?
Good question. I faced Barry Bonds, and he never hit a home run off me, but he hit like 465.
But you kept him in the ballpark.
And you know what? I remember I was announcing my first 5 or 6 years, whatever, and Barry was with the Giants, and I told him, hey, I own you. You never hit a home run off me. So somebody, I said, I'll bet. He goes, I'll bet you a dollar I hit a home run off you. I said, okay, you're on. So the statistician back then, you know, there was no internet, so they checked the numbers. No home runs, but 465 or whatever it was. So he gave me the dollar bill and he signed it. He goes, I owned you. 435 average, no home runs. So that was pretty cool.
All right. The Padres kind of captured people's imagination here. You got a lot of young talent there. I'm curious, Mark Grant, the pitcher, as opposed to Mark Grant, the homer for the Padres, how you would react to Tatis hitting a grand slam and having a bat flip.
As a pitcher, would probably, and I'll be quite honest with you, if I was out there pitching, it would probably disrupt my timing. It would probably tick me off, no doubt about it. But as I've grown older and balder and fatter, I think that these unwritten rules sometimes are kind of just tear them up, throw them away. The game has changed so much, Dan, and you know that. I mean, the entertainment value, you know, the old MLB adage, it let the kids play. I'm all for that. I don't think Fernando or anybody is really showing up a pitcher. It's the excitement of the game. I mean, let's face it. The media we have these days just has these guys every single moment watching what they're doing when they're at bat, when they're on the mound or whatever. So, in fact, we talked about this after the fact. When Fernando did that, I said my bottom line was, you know what, as a pitcher now, pitch better. What are we supposed to do 3-0? Just hitters are just supposed to lay down the bat and then give the hitter a free strike. And then just, you know, lay it in there, give the pitcher a free strike. Now it's 3-1. Now he makes that really, really good pitch. You kind of take it at the knees. Okay, now it's 3-2. Now what do? I'm really protecting, roll something over, you know, whatever. So my philosophy is bottom line, pitch better. Make a better pitch, 3-0.
I love it. And I think you have to attract a whole new generation here. Now, I don't want it to be gimmicky, but let's have some – I think there's enough celebrating the game itself. Yeah. And it feels like old school, hey, these are the rules or the unwritten rules. And I loved what Tatis did.
I think it's organic. I really do. And when you look around baseball, Dan, I think a lot of it is organic because the guys are – and once you get to know these guys too, it's very, very important to know that it is organic. They're not just making this up. And I want to know where it's written to where – you know, times have changed, no doubt about it. But I want to know where it's written that baseball was – a tennis match, where it was a game to where you're supposed to be proper. And, you know, I'm all about not showing up the opponents. Don't get me wrong, but showing emotion, I think, is a huge part. And you're absolutely right. With this crop of talent that we have, especially I'm speaking for San Diego, Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis Jr., the whole shooting match. I mean, it's about time to where these guys go out there and show some emotion. And, you know, when a guy hits a home run and he bat flips and he looks at his teammates in the dugout and does the old, you know, fist pump or whatever the case may be, you know, fans love that. I love that. It's the emotion of the game, I have no problem with it.
How do the Padres beat the Dodgers?
Well, it's going to have to be first of all, the pitching is a big question mark. Any baseball fan out there who's been watching, Denelson Lament, Mike Clevinger. Clevinger hasn't pitched since the 23rd. There's a chance that he might get a start. Lamet hasn't pitched since the 25th of September. So I think the Achilles heel for the Padres is the starting pitching. There's no question about that. They were 6-4 against the Dodgers this year. How do they beat him? They beat Buehler earlier this year. They beat Kershaw once this year. They're going to have to grind out at bats. I know it sounds like a lot of cliches, but these guys are good pitchers. Let's face it. The Dodgers, when you look at their pitchers, when healthy, they've got really good pitchers. It's going to be tough to beat. I think one of the games is going to be possibly a bullpen game for the Padres. How about that? Using 9 pitchers in a game, major league record. One of them probably going to be a slugfest. You know, teams can't get to Kershaw, can't get to Buehler. But avoid the strikeouts. I think that's one thing, Dan. I remember, gosh, you talked about watching bad baseball for many years. My goodness. Over the course of some seasons, after a ball game, there would be, count them, 4 innings of strikeouts. 4 innings of Padre hitters striking out. That is not fun to call. That is not fun to watch.
Did you cry when they clinched a playoff spot?
I got a little emotional. Yeah, I did. And I'll tell you why. After watching so many – well, first of all, wearing the Padre uniform for 3 years and living here in San Diego and having the gig that I do have, you know, you grow attached to your team. And I was sick and tired – of the Dodgers coming into town and kicking their you-know-whats around. I'm not on the team, but I say our. I was sick and tired of the Cardinals coming to town. I was sick. You get the idea. I was sick and tired of people treating the Padres like the doormat of the National League, coming in and say, oh yeah, we'll sweep them three games. They're horrible. You know, we'll be in their bullpen in the third inning, which was true, but still I was sick and tired of it. It was accumulation of everything more for the fans that have endured such brutal baseball over the years, very lean years, to finally have something to cheer about. And it all of a sudden it just kind of got to me. And it was like, gosh, that family in La Mesa that's been following the Padres since the PCL days, that family in Escondido that's been loving the Padres since 1970. You know where I'm going with this. So yeah. It was an accumulation of everything, wearing the uniform, getting their butts kicked, and then finally getting a chance to go to the postseason since 2006. It just kind of all hit me. So,
and, you know, if you're watching on Peacock, Mark Grant has got some things in the background there. But you're one of the first guests. Now, who is that? That is
Dwayne Kuiper.
Oh, the famous broadcaster there, Dwayne Kuiper.
Yep. Dwayne is probably my dearest friend in baseball.
Light-hitting Dwayne Kuiper.
Hi, Dwayne Kuiper, one home run off of Steve Stone as a Cleveland Indian. Yep.
But I do love that you got pull sticks there, but you don't have a pool table, which is interesting in your man cave there. Like, that's a nice little touch that it looks like you have a pool table.
Well, you know what? I do have a pool table. My iPad is propped up on three pillows right here.
No, it's okay, Mark. I understand. You don't have it. You don't have a pool table.
But I'm actually sitting in old stadium seats from old Comiskey Park back in Chicago. There, remember the green wooden? Yeah. So anyway, that's about the only thing I have. This is the only baseball thing I have in my house right here.
A Dwayne Kuiper bobblehead doll.
Yeah, the light-hitting second baseman, the captain, Dwayne Kuiper. So,
well, good luck and have fun.
Thanks. You know, do you remember the last time we hung out?
Should we talk about it?
I can tell you where we were and when it was.
Okay.
1991, Atlanta, Georgia, Jocks and Jills.
Yeah. Craig Sager's bar.
Yeah, that's right. God rest his soul. Yep, Craig Sager's bar. And we were just yucking it up, having a good time. Of course, that was the year that the Braves went to the World Series in 1991. I was hurt. I was the official cheerleader of the team. I did not pitch one inning that year, and that's why the Braves were so successful.
So does this count as hanging out, and is this fate that we're reuniting?
In this day and age, yes, this is hanging out. Anytime I can look at my iPad and see. I mean, you look great.
Thank you.
I mean, oh my gosh. You still have your hair?
Yeah. Yeah,
you still look great.
And I feel bad because, you know, I always enjoyed hanging around you, but there was no reason to have you on the show because you hadn't done anything successfully. And so, I mean, no offense, Mark, I just I couldn't have you on. Hey, another Padre season where you won 68 games.
Yeah. Right.
But I'm happy that we can reconnect because the Padres are bringing us together.
Yeah, I can. The only success, let's see. All those bad years, I had some great food in the press area. I gained a lot of weight.
Yeah.
Ate a lot of yogurt, frozen yogurt. You know, all those pottery losses were like tilted evenly because there was a great yogurt machine in the press dining room or nice. Something like that. That's why I loved going to the pottery games back then, is because of the yogurt. The baseball wasn't so good, but the yogurt.
How many losses have you been a part of as a broadcaster with the Padres? Have you totaled it up?
Well, I started in 1996. This being my 25th season, and I would say the teams that were above 500 were. Well, 96 was 98, 2006. There were some good years there, middle 2000, 2007, 2008. Maybe fewer than 10?
No, the total of losses, like the number of games that you've watched the Padres lose in 25.
Oh, it's got to be over 1,000, right?
You know what? I'll get my stat guy to do it.
And 1996.
And by the way, and have you ever been mistaken for Steve, the Jerry Springer bodyguard, Steve Wilkos?
Steve Wilkos.
Yeah. Have you ever been mistaken for him?
I have never. No, I have never. No. Uncle Fester, yes.
I can see also a little Cal Ripken in you, too. Very little. No, very.
Like a fat?
Very little. It's the hair.
Fat Cal Ripken?
Cal was a better pitcher. I'm being mean-spirited here. I never got to pitch in the shows.
That's okay.
Yes.
That's the Dan Patrick I know.
Of course. Hey, great to catch up with you, and I'll talk to you in 25 years.
So let's see, 25 years. I'll be 40. I'll be 57 this month. I'll see you. I'll have my walker and I'll have my Metamucil with me and all that good stuff.
Paulie, put it in the rundown.
Done.
To call Mark Grant in 25 years. Thank you, buddy.
Dan, be well. Go Pods.
That's Mark Grant, 25 seasons, Padres color analyst. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. We just came up with a question, and I don't know what the answer is, but do you have a policy when it comes to who your partner has dated before? So prior to getting married, and Seton and McLovin and I were on the basketball floor just talking about this. Now, I don't want to know anything. There's nothing good that can come out of it. But even when you first meet, I don't want to know. You know, hey, were you almost engaged? Or were you engaged? I don't want to know anything about that. Yes, Seton. You have a policy?
I don't know that we did have a policy. But I mean, I know, like that we've all had a life before that. I mean, we've talked about people that we've dated sort of like in conversation.
But how does it come up in conversation?
It depends. Like sometimes you're like Andrew just told a story about how he traveled to Juneau, Alaska. And you're like, oh, I went there with an ex once.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a pretty natural thing to come
up
in.
But did you tell your wife about going to Juneau, Alaska, McLovin, with a girlfriend?
No, but I would. And she, you know, once you have kids, I feel like that part of your life is gone. So it's okay to talk about it.
Man, I don't think so. Paulie, you got a policy?
I like to know nothing. I do know nothing. I don't talk a lot about mine. I had a situation once where I took my daughter to daycare, my young daughter, very young, 1 year old. And one of the other moms dropping her similar 1 year old daughter of a daycare was a girl I used to hang out with quite a bit. And before I met my wife. So now the circles got intertwined.
Did you tell your wife that you dated her?
Yes. I was forthcoming. I jumped out of the grenade. But you don't want any part of it. I don't want to know hers. She doesn't want to know mine.
No, there's nothing good that comes out of this. Yeah, see.
Typically, no. Typically, no. Nothing good comes out of it.
Todd?
I'm a bit insecure if you guys just met me, so I'll take a walk down memory lane out loud without my wife asking for any of the questions about what's going on in my past. Not that I was a gigolo, I had some great past. But
yeah, but does she do the same?
She does not, because again, she's more secure and she doesn't need to do that. But I will say that about a week or so ago, my daughter saw some old picture from some book. I don't know what kind of book she's keeping, but she's like, who is that boy or guy next to you? Oh, that was my boyfriend, Mike, back in high school. And then I hear my daughter say, oh, he was really cute. And that wasn't necessarily a shot at me, but I don't need to hear my daughter talking about that there's some good-looking ex-boyfriend that my wife went out with in high school. So that was
a little strange. High school.
I know, but it was still strange.
I that's not bad. I mean,
like if it was like, who's this guy next to you? Like, oh, that's Jim the billionaire that I dated just before your father. Then you'd be like, ah, dang, that sucks. Now you're stuck with me and you could have been with Jim the billionaire. I wonder why Jim the billionaire didn't work out. That must be a really tough break for you, huh? Honey, what do you want for dinner? That sucks, but your high school boyfriend, at a certain point, you gotta be like an adult.
Yeah, that's where you have to clean out your scrapbooks and just make sure that there's no remnants of anything.
Yeah, if you have like an old bin with notes and stuff and pictures.
Yeah, letters from an ex.
It
will be found.
Valentine's cards.
Let it go.
Yes. I still have that plate that had the veggies on it from Simone in Sheepshead Bay there. Should I have thrown that plate out that had the little crudité? No.
Does your wife have a plate?
I hope not. There is a drawer that she told me not to open up. There's a drawer like right under the lamp on the side of the bed. I'm not allowed to touch that. I don't know what's going on in there.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Let's bring in Chris Sims, co-host of Pro Football Talk and, of course, Football Night in America analyst, joining us on the program. We were just discussing the difference between a shuttle pass and a shovel pass. Which one is correct, being a former quarterback in the NFL?
I don't know what a shuttle pass is, so I would say shovel pass is the only one I know of. I know how to run the 20-yard shuttle at the combine,
okay,
but I don't know of a shuttle pass.
Patrick Mahomes last night had two touchdown passes, and the passes were behind the line of scrimmage. Is that a shovel pass?
I guess I would consider that a shovel pass. Yes, I would. A speed sweep, shovel pass, whatever. Yes.
Should it count? Should it count as a touchdown?
I mean, no, not really. As far as a touchdown pass, I don't know if I totally will say I agree with that. I mean, it's a tough one, actually. I haven't thought about it real deeply. It is a cheap way to get a touchdown pass. There's no doubt about that. But Patrick Mahomes also gets a lot of not cheap ways to get a touchdown pass too, to where I can live with it, and he can have a cheapie every now and then.
Let's dissect what we saw with. Let's start with the Chiefs and the Patriots here, because I thought Belichick, flying day of, no cam, had a game plan there. It just, if you don't have that, quality quarterback, then, you're not going to win that game. But what did you think of what he was trying to do against Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City?
Yeah, well, I think you're right. I mean, the game plan was really quality on both sides of the football. And he didn't even need, a good quarterback to maybe win that football game, or at least keep a really competitive fourth quarter. He just needed a quarterback that wasn't, stupid, for lack of a better phrase. I mean, that just was unbelievable, some of the things we saw Brian Hoyer do. I mean, really, I'm just shocked by that to this point. Lack of management, lack of awareness of what he's doing, all of those things. But back to what you said, I mean, again, Belichick shows why he's one of the greatest coaches ever. He does a game plan that he just feels like is going to help them win the football game. It doesn't matter how pretty it looks or whatever. And they do match up really well with Kansas City, Dan. They really do. They got the best secondary in football. They can match that speed. And then along with outside-the-box thinking from the Belichicks, and then, of course, we know on the offensive side of the ball, I mean, there's always something creative, and they're a force running the football. I mean, I know, like you, I couldn't help but sit there last night and go, what is this game like if Cam Newton's playing out here?
And then you had the Falcons against the Packers, and even though Aaron Rodgers doesn't have his top, two, three receivers, and I know it's Atlanta, but there is an effortless feel watching Aaron Rodgers. What changed for Aaron Rodgers from last year to this year?
Yeah, I think, you've heard him say, the communication, the offense, year two, they're being more creative. I do think it's the trust factor that's really led to the better play. Because one, I mean, you've been watching Rodgers. You've heard me talk about him for years. I think he was scarred for a time where people weren't open that much. So, ooh, that's a tight window. All right, I don't like that. I'm not going to take a chance. Let me dance around the pocket and I'll find an easier completion because I'm Aaron Rodgers and I can do that. But it also led to some, moments of, wait, that guy was open last year and you should have thrown it to him. And I think this year he's just totally bought in to where last night, I mean, how many times did we see him just look at the first receiver and he went, he's open, maybe only by 3 inches, but I'm going to cut it loose and throw it in there. And to me, it's just more aggressive that way with his frame of thinking or my thinking there. And their play calling is more aggressive too. I think that's the two biggest things that jump out to me, let alone, like you said, Atlanta stinks on the defensive side of the ball.
Speaking of winless teams, the Texans showing Bill O'Brien the door. Will that be a coveted head coaching job?
I do think so, because of number four at the quarterback spot. I mean, Deshaun Watson, not playing his best football right now, but they got a lot of issues on that football team. And I think, regardless, coaches are going to look at that and go, wait, I can go down there and coach Deshaun Watson still early in his career. You know, you can still build a team around that. So I would expect, you know, that's where I expect it to be something offensively orchestrated as far as a head coach. Is that Eric Bieniemy? Is this where we hear the Lincoln Riley conversation once again from Oklahoma? But I would think that they're going to be all in about an offensive-minded coach because of Deshaun Watson.
When did the Dolphins start to give Tua a little run here?
I mean, I hope sooner rather than later. I mean, I would like to see him get out there where the season's still somewhat in the balance, right? It's not like, oh, they're 1-7 and it's totally over. I would like to see them out here soon. I mean, you know, we know what Ryan Fitzpatrick is. I do find it a hair concerning that Tua, and there's not more conversation about him being out there already. I think that kind of speaks volumes a little bit to the fact that maybe he's just not running away with it or so impressive that they go, man, he's so impressive. The team sees it. Everybody sees it. We got to bench Fitzpatrick and play Tua. You know, we're doing a disservice to our team. It obviously has not got to that. But I would think another 2-3 losses for sure, no matter what, you're going to start to see Tua.
I know that Joe Burrow being the number one pick, he didn't have any competition to be the starting quarterback. Justin Herbert had a little bit with Tyrod Taylor. Can Justin Herbert be better than Joe Burrow?
Yes, he can. Yes. No doubt about it. I mean, anybody that listens to me and what I talk about draft wise, quarterback wise, all of those things. It's one thing I tried to say a lot. Joe Burrow was clearly the best quarterback coming into this draft. But I kind of had said all along, Justin Herbert has an incredibly high ceiling. I mean, he has special things about his game. And yeah, he was raw and he played in an Oregon offense that wasn't that good. And again, that's where people misevaluate too much right now at the quarterback position. They take the whole team and they blame it on one guy and go, I don't know. I mean, the stats weren't good and they didn't win national championship. Must have been Justin Herbert's fault. No, absolutely not. That's ridiculous. He's big. He has a special arm. I mean, he can make game-changing type throws. And you can see he knows how to take care of the football and throw with some accuracy too. A rookie, some mistakes there, but man, a lot of positives to build on.
Yeah, I think, and I agree with you, because if we're going to factor in that Joe Burrow is the number one quarterback, I got to factor in everybody on that offensive side of the ball. Like, he had unbelievable talent there, because I don't know if he's the first pick overall or he's a fifth round pick, which he would have been the previous year. And, you know, trying to, and you do a great job at this, but trying to look at talent at that position and say, like Jordan Love, I have no idea. I know the previous year when he had weapons, he was really good. Then his last season, he didn't have weapons and he didn't look good at all, but was still a first round pick.
Yeah, it's tough. It's the toughest thing about evaluating the position. It's why I've been, you know, hey, listen, I was, you know, whatever, lucky, whatever you want to say, with guys like Josh Allen and even Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, because I just went, hey, I mean, just block it out. Don't have any bias when you go in to watch this film. Evaluate the player for what he is and then go, wait, what is he being asked to do? Is it realistic that he can get that done? And then also, is there help around him that's realistic to go, wait, that's his fault or that's a good job by him or whatever that is? But too often, it is hard. Now, Joe Burrow, where I would say it was different than maybe some quarterbacks when you see like an awesome college team to like what you're saying, he made so many plays when I went, man, there was nothing there. The defense won the play. They got a good pass rush. Everybody was covered, and he still made something happen. And to me, that always speaks volumes. And that's something I look at, because life in the NFL, unless you're on one of the best teams in the game, is going to be a lot of, whoa, the defense won. This guy's covered. I'm under attack here, and I got to make something happen off schedule. And that's why Burrow was special. And I think that's why we're going to see Justin Herbert being really special as well. But to your point too, Dan, if Justin Herbert was on LSU or Alabama, they'd be just as damn good as they were already. I mean, just, you know, you need a team.
He's Chris Sims, co-host of Pro Football Talk and NBC Football Night in America. I just don't know what I'm seeing when I watch Josh Allen, because I don't know if it's a second coming of Cam Newton. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah. It's like, you know, they have like the evolution of humans, right? And, you know, it like goes from the caveman to like, I don't know what this is. I look at Josh Allen and go, this is Brett Favre 27 years later and the evolution of man, right? Just, yeah, plays with his hair on fire sometimes and he does things and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he did that. Whoa, what an amazing play. I mean, that's really what he kind of reminds me of. But I think, you know, you're saying it. He's a special talent. You can see. And again, that was another guy. Oh, the numbers and, you know, the grading and, oh, all the, you know,
small
grading
conference.
Experts.
Yeah, small
right,
conference.
Small conference. The crappiest team I've seen any top-tier quarterback play on in the last 2 years. No pass protection, playing in the blizzard and all of those type of things. No help around him. But, you know, you see the talent. And, again, now they've helped him out with getting more talent in Buffalo. And Brian Daboll and Sean McDermott are really attacking through Josh Allen, which I think tells you a lot. They trust him. They have the weapons around him. He's refined his game, certainly. And he's a superstar. There's no doubt he's one of the five best quarterbacks in football right now as we sit here through 4 weeks.
All right. So that's Russell Wilson.
Yep.
Mahomes.
Right.
Aaron Rodgers.
Right. I'm still going to go Lamar. I'm going to put okay. Lamar in my top five. I'm not going to let that Kansas City game just totally throw me for a loop for all the other good stuff I've seen for the last year and a half. And then, yeah, I'm going to throw Josh Allen in there right now. And I know we want to see more and everything like that, but what we've seen to this point is, other than Russell Wilson, MVP-level stuff from Josh Allen. So we'll see if he can continue to do this, but they certainly seem confident he can just by the way they're calling the game and attacking it on a week-to-week basis.
Why are we treating the NFL MVP the way we do the Heisman? We want to hand out the Heisman after September. When did we get into this rush to say, oh, he's the MVP right now, the NFL, after 3 weeks? And I go, it's 3 weeks? It's like Leonard Fournette would have won the Heisman if they ended in September when he was at right. LSU.
You're right.
Why are we in a hurry to, like, are we running out of things to talk about where we got to go? How do I stir up some controversy? Josh Allen and Russell Wilson for MVP. I'll hang up and listen. Like,
well, yeah, I know. You're right. Oh, I think what at least in my mind, what I'm doing is I'm just trying to paint a picture of, damn, this guy's playing good football. That's all I really
But you could be playing
about.
Against crappy teams. I know,
but
can
I'm
we
not
wait?
Gonna...
How about eight games? Can yeah, we just wait sure. eight games?
But I get it, and okay, I won't say it anymore about the MVP stuff and anything. I'll take your coaching. I always listen to you, but I will say too, we don't have to say MVP or anything like that. But I am sick of everybody giving like Josh Allen a compliment, and prior to that, they give him three backhanded compliments where it's like, well, he was crappy and he had bad accuracy and. It's an anomaly, but somehow he's good. Like, I'm sick of hearing that crap. He's really good. He's here to stay. And in my formula, with my rankings, I knew he was going to be good.
I'll leave you with this. If you were yeah. running the Falcons,
yeah,
would you consider trading Julio Jones? I don't know if you can trade Matt Ryan, but would you look to rebuild
yes.
the Falcons? Yes.
Yes, it's the shelf life of this team is over, in my opinion. It's done. They've tried to hang on to the stars that were there, that 2016 team. There's no depth to the football team at all. I mean, here, this is second year in a row or third year in a row. The few injuries and their team is shot. They have nothing else because they're so top heavy. I look at two guys where I go right now and just go, whoa. When the trade block comes around, Julio Jones and A.J. Green, if I'm the Bengals, they got receivers. They just drafted a receiver with the 33rd pick of the draft. They're good. This is the time to strike to get assets to rebuild your football team. And, yeah, I would say that. If I'm Arthur Blank or the Brown family in Cincinnati, I'm putting them on the trade block when that time comes around.
Good to talk to you, Chris. As always, thank you. Continue to stir it up.
All right. I'm not stirring anything up. I'm just talking ball, but thank you. I appreciate that. And tell the your you know jerk friends I said hello.
My jerk friends. Wow. Wow. Thank you, Chris. By the way, yeah. Danette, Chris says say hello to you jerk friends there. So yeah, you're welcome. Chris Sims, co-host of Pro Football Talk and NBC Football Night in America. You jerks. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.